Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning. I'm Marcia Young. Japanese carmaker Honda says it will build 4 new manufacturing plants in Ontario. It is investing about $15 billion to create Canada's first comprehensive electric vehicle supply chain. Toshihiro Mibe is the CEO of Honda.
The world is changing rapidly, and we must work toward realizing carbon neutrality to sustain the global environment.
The CBC's Tom Perry joins us from our parliamentary bureau. And Tom, take us through the details of this announcement.
Well, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is calling this the biggest investment ever in Canada's auto sector. Honda is investing a lot of money, about $15 billion. Honda says this money is going to build what the company calls a vehicle value chain. So what that means is building electric cars from start to finish here in Canada. 2 plants to make battery components, 1 to build the actual batteries, and a 4th plant to assemble the electric vehicles that will, of course, be powered by those batteries. And this should create about 1,000 full-time jobs. And the Honda CEO says that the goal is to build as many as 240,000 electric vehicles per year once this is all up and running.
So how much is this going to cost the Ontario and federal governments?
Well, right. Ontario and Ottawa, of course, had offered incentives worth about $5 billion in total to Honda to build these facilities. Now, Ottawa says about half of that, so $2.5 billion roughly, will come through its proposed EV supply chain vehicle investment tax credit and its proposed clean technology manufacturing investment tax credit. These are measures announced in the last 2 federal budgets. I should say, however, they've not been enacted yet, so that's got to get done before that money can flow. The government of Ontario says it's going to provide the rest of that support, so the other $2.5 billion through what it calls various direct and indirect incentives. I guess we'll have to wait to hear the details exactly of how that money is going to flow to Honda, a big investment that is being called historic by Ontario Premier Doug Ford and by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
The CBC's Tom Perry reporting from Ottawa. New York's highest court has overturned Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction. The state appeals court found the judge was prejudiced against the former Hollywood producer, and he improperly allowed women to testify about allegations that were not part of the case. The court has ordered a new trial, but Weinstein will remain in prison. In 2022, he was convicted of another rape in Los Angeles and sentenced to 16 years behind bars. Indigenous Services Canada is struggling to respond to requests to help First Nations children. New data obtained by CBC News shows the federal department is responding to about a third of cases on time. As Olivia Stefanovich reports, critics say those delays put children's lives at risk.
To see such low levels of compliance for the most needy kids is really, really concerning.
Every minute, a request to help First Nations children sits idle. Advocate Cindy Blackstock says there are consequences.
It can be as serious as life and death.
Under a federal program known as Jordan's Principle, Indigenous Services Canada covers a wide range of health, social, and education needs for First Nations children. The department is supposed to process urgent requests within 12 hours and non-urgent requests within 2 days. But new data obtained by CBC News shows that's only happening about a third of the time, and delays are getting worse.
There's real issues here in terms of treating Indigenous children the way we expect any child in this country to be treated.
New Democrat MP Charlie Angus says the numbers send a message.
If you're an Indigenous child that needs medical care, you you're on your own.
Indigenous Services Canada declined CBC's request for an interview. But in a statement, the department says it's hiring more staff to reduce delays and exploring new technology to manage the sheer volume of requests. Since 2018, the department says demand has exploded from just under 16,000 cases to more than 100,000. Olivia Stefanovich, CBC News, Ottawa.
A Toronto-area woman has just learned she may not be Canadian. She has been in the country nearly her entire life. As Olivia Bowden reports, she got a letter from Immigration Canada that is taking months to sort out.
I was totally shocked.
Ariel Townsend says she never thought to question her citizenship. She was just a few months old when she came to Canada from Jamaica. But everything changed for the 32-year-old last September, when a letter from Immigration Canada said her citizenship could be canceled.
I thought that there would be roadblocks to me becoming who I wanted to be in this country and making myself successful, but I never thought that that roadblock would be literally revoking my citizenship.
Townsend was born in Jamaica in the 90s. Her mother says she had just become a Canadian a few months before the birth, but the government now says its records show her mother was not a Canadian until after. Daniel Kingwell is a lawyer for Townsend.
We're asking the government to recognize if a mistake was made, it wasn't her fault, it wasn't her mother's fault. She should either be able to retain her citizenship or they should give her citizenship.
Kingwell says they filed the proper documents with the government 5 months ago and have not heard back. In the meantime, Townsend cannot leave the country until this is resolved. She says she feels helpless.
I'm the one responsible for fixing the problem that I did not even create for myself. I don't know how they expect me to prove something that I have no ability to prove.
Immigration Canada told CBC they do not comment on individual cases due to privacy legislation. Olivia Bowden, CBC News, Toronto.
The summer of 2024 could be another hot one. That is the warning coming from climate scientists, even as they say El Nino is coming to an end. Senior science reporter Nicole Mortellaro has that story.
2023 isn't a year many Canadians will forget. It was the hottest summer on record, the hottest year, and we experienced the worst wildfire season in history. Now, there's the fear that we could be in for a repeat this year, even though El Nino is expected to end by the middle of spring.
So the long-term trends are not the surprising thing.
Gavin Schmidt is the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies. He says 2023's anomalous rise in temperature could have been a blip. But
basing it on the El Nino at the beginning of the year and then like seeing, you know, how things are working out this year, it suggests that 2024 is going to be almost the same as 2023.
El Nino typically raises global temperatures in the following year, and 2024 has already started with record highs. Karen Gleason is a climate scientist with the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
So if 2024 follows the path, it's already in a different neighborhood. It's in a warmer neighborhood to begin with.
With an early start to wildfire season in BC and Alberta, it's likely many people are anxious about what summer has in store. Nicole Mortellaro, CBC News, Toronto.
Today, Venice becomes the first major city in the world to charge tourists an entrance fee. The fragile UNESCO Heritage City has been overrun with nearly 30 million visitors a year. And as Megan Williams tells us, the fee is an effort to deter day trippers.
For cruise ship vacationers to train travelers, the already costly city of Venice just got more expensive. Starting today, day trippers will have to pay just to set foot on the city of canals. For the cost of 5 euros, about 750 Canadian dollars, tourists get a QR code, which they then have to show at several entrance points to the city or during random checks. Failure to produce the code can lead to a fine as high as $450. Locals and visiting relatives are exempt.
Fare qualcosa per Venezia.
Finally, something for Venice, says this resident.
Giusto che chi viene da fuori paghi qualcosa.
Given all Venice offers, it's fair that visitors pay something in return, says this local.
Qui viviamo e qui restiamo.
Despite some protests by residents who say the move turns Venice into a theme park, the city's mayor, Luigi Brugnaro, insists it's not a money grab.
Chi viene in giornata ha il diritto di farlo. possa sapere.
With this new system, visitors can know how many people are set to come on any given day and decide whether or not it's worth the trip then, he says. The entrance fee to access Venice's historic center applies to 29 peak days, mostly weekends, until mid-July, when the city will assess the success of the new scheme. Megan Williams, CBC News, Rome.
And that is the latest national and international news from World Report. News anytime, cbcnews.ca. I'm Marcia Young.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.